No matter what you've heard, if you like your doctor or healthcare plan, you can keep it.
But we have to pass the bill so that you can find out what is in it.
Oh my. Greetings, salutations, and welcome aboard. It's the Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this almost hour of observation, insight, and who knows what else? Absurdity, that's the word. Actually, it's about 51 minutes for the podcast version. And we start off with a little bit of a reminder about who and what the Democrat leftists really are. A pack of liars. Trying to persuade the American people to do what they want for your own good. Oh my gosh. What a day, what a day. Today we've got all kinds of weirdness going on, culminating in the debate tonight between President Donald Trump and former VP and Democrat candidate for the presidency, Joe, our creepy uncle, Biden. Going to be an interesting evening. At least I think so. Because I've been seeing, well, you and I both, I guess, we've been seeing these reports that Uncle Joe's having a lot of trouble keeping things in gear. His brain and his mouth aren't working on the same track. He's been taking a lot of time away from the press lately and away from public appearances. And of course, coming up to a debate, you can assume that's debate prep. But it certainly is an interesting amount of time away for debate prep, where they put a lid on his activities for the day. The press pool can't access him, and he's not seen in public. You combine that with odd little reports we've been getting I would say, not top-tier sources that there are some shenanigans going on in the background. You may have seen the photo of Joe Biden on stage somewhere. Clearly, well, not clearly, he's wearing an earpiece. He has an earpiece in his ear, which is clearly molded to look as though it's part of his ear. It's not one of these TV earpieces with a little curly-cued tube running up to it. It's not an IFB. It's not anything that you would normally associate with the average rank and file type of earpiece. The close-up clearly shows it's molded to actually look like it's part of his ear, so that it is a secret earpiece, if you will. And I really do hope that we have some good close-ups of creepy Uncle Joe in the debate tonight, so we can see whether or not you can clearly see into his ears, or if he's actually wearing something and somebody is elsewhere giving him cues, which would be completely and totally against everything you and I know is right. But we are dealing with progressives, and progressives have no moral compass. I dealt with this yesterday. I shared with you the piece by Dennis Prager about the fact that there is no moral compass, that their philosophy is rooted in the philosophy of Karl Marx, who doesn't see there being any kind of moral compass, that there is no set of morals other than what is good for the worker or what is bad for the worker. What's good is good. What's bad is evil. And that's the only judgment of good and evil that Marxists, that is, progressives, have. And since we have progressives running for president and pushing Joe Biden and managing everything he does and says, you can pretty much expect that they won't see any problem whatsoever with cheating any way, shape, or form they can in order to get ahead. Because there's nothing wrong with that. Because it's good for the workers. Whew. Well, here we are. It's Tuesday, the 29th day of September 2020. And on the menu today, there's a handful of things to talk about. Some former Reagan and Bush government officials have endorsed President Trump. the mail-in voting situation, you know, the President Trump has been saying and thinking rational, realistic, honest people have been saying for quite some time that mail-in voting is fraught with issues. And we'll take another look at that. And speaking of that, Project Veritas has released a second in what looks to be a series of videos about vote fraud being orchestrated by the Ilhan Omar campaign in Minnesota. And paying people to vote a certain way, people going into voting booths with voters, and the people at the polling location saying, yeah, that's cool, go ahead. And directing people, vote for this guy, vote for this guy, vote for this guy. We have actual recordings of that now, two of them. And of course, they're already saying, well, that's deceptively edited. And you know what? I don't know if you knew this or not, but the guys over at Project Veritas, they have a wall. They have a wall in their offices. It's covered with framed letters of retraction from source after source after source, which has made such accusations where they say, wow, they deceptively edit. They do this. They don't present all the facts. And they've gone to court. They've sued these people, and they've won time and time and time again, because everyone who is saying that Project Veritas is deceptively editing their video is lying, because they don't. They haven't deceptively edited their video. They are being above board and honest about things. And we'll look at that in a little bit. Let's see what else. We'll look at Trump taxes again and more on this edition of the Daily Perspective podcast. First up, though, a little something absurd and just infuriating. In North California, life is pretty weird. I've been there. Maybe you've been there too. Maybe you live there. And if you're a conservative, you know, you live in one of the most beautiful places in America. I mean, you get outside of the cities and Northern California is absolutely gorgeous. It is a beautiful place to live. And I'd love to go back someday. I'd like to explore. I really would. But the political sentiment in Northern California is, oh, how shall we say, a bit odd. It's kind of strange because it's extremely leftist, very progressive. Well, there's a high school teacher in Northern California who's getting a little of attention they probably didn't want to get, because this high school teacher threatened to kick a student out of a virtual class unless the student removed a Trump 2020 flag from the background in his camera view during the virtual class. According to KOVR-TV, the 16-year-old student was in his bedroom participating in an online class for Colusa High School when his chemistry teacher took issue with the sign and demanded that he take it down or adjust the camera view. The student's mom, Tiffany, told the TV station, well, since the school's begun, my son's had this Trump flag hanging in his background. According to the student's mom, the teacher told her son, you can sit up, remove the flag, or reposition your camera within the next 15 seconds, or I'm kicking you out of class. Now, in a video of the student, which was recorded by another student, this was included in the news video, the teacher can be heard counting to 15 seconds while repeating the threat. The video shows the teacher wasn't able to complete the count because the student decided to sign off from the class on his own. He can be seen waving to the camera before the screen goes black. According to KOVR-TV, the teacher has since apologized. The student's mother said she isn't blaming the teacher so much as she is the school board for not giving clear guidance on the issue. She says she's a new teacher and it's a mistake. There hasn't been any guidance given to her as a teacher for the school. Tiffany said that when she reached out to a board representative requesting a clarification for the code of conduct, she was rejected. She says, he flat out told me no. We've just not been given any guidance. The Colusa County Code of Conduct includes a dress code ban for clothing with vulgar, obscene, or profane messages, or messages which degrade any race or other group of individuals, but nowhere in the document does it mention anything about politics or campaigns. State Education Code 48907 says this: students of the public schools, including charter schools, shall have the right to exercise freedom of speech and of the press, including but not limited to the use of bulletin boards, the distribution of printed materials or petitions, the wearing of buttons, badges, and other insignia, and the right of expression in official publications, whether or not the publications or other means of expression are supported financially by the school or by use of school facilities, except that expression shall be prohibited which is obscene, libelous, or slanderous. Also prohibited shall be material that so incites pupils as to create a clear and present danger of the commission of unlawful acts on school premises or the violation of lawful school regulations or substantial disruption of the orderly operation of the school. There, according to reports, there hasn't been any punishment. But this mentality is what's troubling about this. And that is that the teacher thought nothing of threatening to kick a student, a 16-year-old student, out of an online class, giving them 15 seconds. I'll give you 15 seconds. You move the camera, get that flag out of the view, or take it down. And he starts counting down. And the kid finally says, forget this, waves goodbye and shuts it down. The mentality, the fact that it's there, even though it's not an official policy, the fact that the mentality is there is troubling. But I guess we shouldn't be all that surprised, because in recent months we have learned that members of the teaching profession have been on the streets protesting, some rioting in the dark of night with Antifa and BLM in places like Kenosha and Portland. So we should not be shocked that a teacher addresses a student and threatens them for their political affiliation in front of their class, in a virtual chemistry class. A chemistry class. So, what's more important to the teacher? Assuring that the student gets what he needs to get out of this class, or making sure the student doesn't poison the minds of everybody else with his political affiliation? I think it's clear which one this teacher has chosen. And the fact that the mentality is there, the fact that in the profession of educating the children of our nation, people have such poor judgment as to make this an issue. Clearly, the teacher was personally offended by the Trump flag being there and made an issue out of it. And I think that's the key here. We're seeing people in the teaching profession who have taken their personal offense and made it policy in many cases and an issue for all students, because personally, they have allowed themselves to become offended by something which, to a mature thinking adult, should not be offensive. Face it, you as a conservative see things every day which you find troubling, disgusting, and disturbing. And on some level, it does offend you, but you don't make it an issue. Because why? You're a mature adult, and you understand something that clearly progressives don't. And that is, when you allow yourself to be offended, it's your decision. It's your fault. You are the one who chose to allow the offense to occur. And so, when these people are offended, it's their fault, not ours. Welcome back. It's the Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast for the 29th day of September 2020. Can you believe the year is like three quarters gone? It's just amazing. We've got October, November, and December left. Wow. Before you know it, Halloween will be behind us. We'll be looking at Thanksgiving and then Christmas. And then New Year's and another year. And in the process, we have an election. And we should all be focused on that right now. Not to the exclusion of life, but keeping in mind that life in America can't continue to be free if we allow the wrong people to govern. Because the wrong people, the progressives, see government as their calling in life rather than their duty and their responsibility to the people who ask them, by electing them, to serve their interests. Because progressives believe they're smarter and they care more. And because of this, they deserve to be in positions of power and authority for the good of the people. One of those people is Senator Dianne Feinstein. Yeah. Last night on Fox News, Tucker Carlson brought a story about Senator Feinstein, who has written a letter to the FAA calling for a mandatory mask policy on airlines. She did this back in June. That there should be, according a government policy, dictating the behavior of businesses, mandating that businesses in America, the airline industry, airline companies, must require all passengers to wear masks. Now, we've had stories recently of absurd things like toddlers, two-year-olds being required to wear masks, and last week or week before, a woman being tossed off of an airline, off of an air flight, because her toddler was eating a snack and not wearing a mask. And they didn't take that into consideration. They didn't take into consideration that he was wearing the mask when he got on the plane, or the fact that he was wearing the mask when they came to them and told them to get off the flight. It's just that he wasn't wearing it at one point, and they said, nah, people are using that as an excuse, you're out of here. And that lack of concern, that lack of care, in the face of objections by other passengers on the plane, that example is the progressive mentality. There's no flexibility, there's no nothing. It's just, you will comply, or you will suffer. Well, that is also Dianne Feinstein's mentality. And rather than leaving it up to the airlines, she wanted it to be mandated by the FAA. Well, that's predictable. And so is this.
Hey, on Fox News Channel.
Listen up.
More and more lawmakers are calling for a nationwide rule on wearing face coverings. Senator Dianne Feinstein has written to federal agencies asking for a mandatory mask policy, both in the air and on public transit.
Well, that was news footage from June, just this June, when California Senator Dianne Feinstein wrote a letter to the FAA demanding everyone wear masks in airports. Feinstein wrote that we need a mandatory mask policy for all airport and airline employees and passengers, end quote. Feinstein claimed the agency had, quote, sowed confusion among passengers about whether masks are necessary. But they are necessary, says Dianne Feinstein. Wow. Not wearing them is very dangerous given the coronavirus. Well, given that, today, this show exclusively obtained photographs of, and this is going to rock your world, Dianne Feinstein in a private terminal at Dulles Airport, an FBO, as they say, in private aviation, on Friday. In the photographs, Feinstein can be seen smiling without a mask on. One might even say she's sowing confusion about whether or not masks are necessary. A pilot with a mask is walking in front of her, carrying a bag and a dog. We reached out to Dianne Feinstein's office about these photographs. We haven't heard back. We can be sure of one thing. This isn't really Dianne Feinstein's fault. Just like when the hair salon framed Nancy Pelosi, caught not wearing a mask while getting her hair done. Dulles Airport, the diabolical FBO, probably mastermind the whole thing. We're going to stay on top of this story and bring you more evidence of the airport's guilt as we inevitably find it.
Wow. That's awesome.
So just last year, Joe Biden was in his mid-70s.
That's just awesome. But here's the thing. Dianne Feinstein is up there. She's, am I right? 87? I should remember this because I posted it to social media not long ago, less than half an hour ago. She's like 87. That puts her in the highest risk category for infection from the coronavirus. She's 87. We know from everything we've learned this year that those who are the highest risk are the elderly. And that is Dianne Feinstein's age group. She's 87, for Pete's sake. As I've said before, she should be retired. She should be home bouncing her great-grandkids on her knees. She should be enjoying time with her family. And she should be doing anything but what she's doing. She's 87. And in the highest risk group. And yet, she's walking through a private airport terminal with a pilot in front of her and someone else behind her, by the way, more than just one person. They're both wearing masks, and yet she is not. She's smiling, walking along between these two people who are obviously pilot and co-pilot, walking to her private flight. Clearly, the progressive, Senator Feinstein, believes that rules apply to you and me, but not to her. Rules apply to the pilot and the co-pilot, carrying her baggage and her dog, but not to her. If she truly believed in the danger of the coronavirus and COVID-19, at her age, being in her extreme high-risk group, she would be wearing a mask, she would be wearing a face shield, she probably would be in a hazmat suit if she really believed what she's pumping out to everyone else. But she clearly doesn't believe this to be true. She doesn't believe all of the hype, all of the fear-mongering going on about the coronavirus. Otherwise, she would be in layers of protection because she is in the highest group of risk for infection. She clearly doesn't believe what we're being told by those who are championing wearing masks and keeping things closed down for as long as possible. Why? Why does she not believe? Because she knows something that nobody is being told. And that is that this virus is not as dangerous as we've been told it is. That today we are on the tail end of the pandemic. Actually, the pandemic is, for all intents and purposes, it's over. And she really has very little, if anything, to fear. But she would never tell you that publicly on the record. Because it's more important to keep you scared, to keep you frightened. Because she learned something very valuable from those who have controlled populations in nations before us. And that is that a frightened people is an easily controlled people. And people like Dianne Feinstein are all about power and control. And keeping the people controlled is necessary. And one of those methods is to keep them frightened about something. If you keep the people frightened, they will look to you to be their savior. And they will give you power and control that they normally would not give you. If they're afraid of something, they will ask you to come and protect them. that is why Dianne Feinstein is not wearing a mask when those around her are. She didn't just forget. She's 87. Oh, she's 87. She just forgot. No. If she sincerely, deeply believed what she has been peddling to the people, insisting not only that airlines, that the FAA force airlines to require masks on every flight, but that states without mask mandates should not receive direct federal funds. See, she is one who ties federal funding to mask mandates. I've mentioned this before, that I believed in my state, the state of Alabama, I believed that Dr. Birx met with our governor. And after meeting with our governor, she decided to keep the mask mandate in place in Alabama. I told you, I believe that that was a possibility floated to her. And she said, you know what, just to be safe, let's keep the mask mandate up. I think that's happening. And this is a Republican governor I'm talking about. But Dianne Feinstein wanted that as well. She wanted, in June, she wanted the FAA to make that mandate. In July, she wanted direct federal funds tied to a mask mandate. Power and control. Never make the mistake of believing anything else of progressive politicians. They believe they're smarter than you and they care more than you. And in order to protect you from your own stupidity, they want more power and control. Hey, did you hear about the raccoons? Yeah, raccoons. You know, like Rocket Raccoon, like Guardians of the Galaxy, Rocky Raccoon. At the White House, did you hear about them? Yeah, apparently there's a problem with raccoons at the White House. The White House grounds, they're constantly setting out live traps, which are basically cages. They put food in the cage and the raccoon goes in and the door drops and they can't get back out again. I told you a few months ago about a story about over at my mom's house. She caught a raccoon. We had to take it and let it go out in the countryside. But and this happens at the White House on a regular basis. And apparently the other day, a couple of members of the press were attacked by a raccoon. Even the raccoons know that the mainstream press is the enemy of the people. So now they're the enemy of the raccoons. That's awesome. Thank you. Thank you, raccoons. I knew you had more sense than the progressives do. Well, the New York Times thinks they got Donald Trump dead to rights. Nah, they don't. From HermanCain.com, there's a story. If Trump paid as little in taxes as the New York Times claims, well, that's good. The less rich people pay in taxes, the better, really. This scandalous-sounding expose from the New York Times apparently is based on Trump's tax records going back several decades. Supposedly, Trump paid as little as $750 a year in taxes, largely because he claims losses that surpass whatever he takes in. The Timesmen and their fans are outraged. Rich people paying so little in taxes is their definition of an American travesty. And, you know, if I can make an aside, they're all running together for me. Every day is the same for me. I don't know why. Anyway, yesterday, a friend of mine on social media was posting, and this is somebody who owns a business. He's a private businessman. He was deeply upset that Donald Trump was not paying his fair share in taxes. And I thought to myself, wait a minute, I know this guy. And I know I've actually seen him posting online in the past about how much time he spends doing his quarterly taxes. And he's one of the people I base my knowledge about taxation on because of his stories. And he's talked about the time he spends preparing his quarterly taxes. Why does he spend so much time? To pay as little as possible, that's why. And yet, he's upset that another businessman is doing the same thing. And he's operating at a financial level, where his losses, It's not like he lost money. By the way, that's another misnomer. These people believe, these idiots believe that because of his P&L statement, his profit and loss statement, and his and the fact that he's taken enough losses to reduce his tax burden by that much, they believe he's got to be going bankrupt. I actually saw that yesterday. Donald Trump may be going bankrupt. What an idiotic claim. Anyway, they don't understand losses are also investments. It's taken out of the profits the company makes. You reinvest your profits. You take that money and you put it into something else. It may be expenses for business. It may be this. It may be that. You may be investing in another company. You may be doing other things with the money, but it can't be. It's moved out of your profit column into your loss column because it's no longer profit. And if it's in your loss column, guess what? You can deduct a percent of it. So that's part of the way it works. That was a very simplistic explanation, but that's how it works. And someone in business knows this. And to object for someone else in business doing this is ludicrous. I got to be honest. Let's back to the article here. We feel differently. While we're disappointed if Trump actually lost as much money as he claimed, we're pleased that he avoided paying a lot in taxes. We wish this was the story of all rich people in America. Donald J. Trump paid $750 in federal income taxes the year he won the presidency. In his first year in the White House, he paid another $750. He had paid no income taxes at all in 10 of the previous 15 years, largely because he reported losing much more money than he made. The tax returns that Mr. Trump has long fought to keep private tell a story fundamentally different from the one he has sold to the American public. His reports to the IRS portray a businessman who takes in hundreds of millions of dollars a year yet racks up chronic losses that he aggressively employs to avoid paying taxes. Wow. When people earn a lot of money, the worst thing that could happen to the country would be if those people had to pay a significant percentage of that money to the government in the form of taxes. The less all people pay in taxes, the better. The less poor people pay, the more they have to meet their needs. That's good for them. But when rich people pay less, it's good for them and for the country. Why? Because the private sector always allocates capital more efficiently than politicians do. When rich people have extra capital, they don't need to take as personal income. They either pour it into companies they own or they invest it in other companies. That does several good things. It directly creates new jobs. It finances the construction of new facilities, which provide construction jobs, sales to material manufacturers, local property tax revenue, and eventually direct jobs to man those facilities. It finances the development and distribution of new products. It pays for employee health benefits, facility safety upgrades, and wage increases. It pays for marketing budgets and for products, which not only protects the jobs of those who make the products, but also of those who create the marketing campaigns. Do you want to see rich people pay less in taxes? Now you might say, nah, rich people don't do any of that. They just put money in offshore accounts. No, most rich people do nothing of the sort. They're investing their capital right here in the United States, although it's worth noting that even money in offshore accounts can still be invested. Now, you might say, oh, yeah, well, companies don't do any of that stuff with their extra money. They just use it for stock buybacks. Well, companies who have a strategic need to do the things listed above and have the capital on hand use the capital to do those things. Companies who don't need to do those things might buy back stock from investors. If they do, then guess what the investors will do? They will turn around and invest it in other companies who need to do the things listed above. The private sector always allocates capital more efficiently than politicians, which is why it's always better when rich people pay less in taxes, not more. Now, you might say, what about the deficit? Who's going to pay for that? Well, if you're concerned about the deficit, then don't vote for the party that's insisting on another $2.4 trillion spending this year. The Republicans aren't great on fiscal restraint either, but no one can seriously express a concern about the deficit and vote for the party of Nancy Pelosi. Either way, the answer to the national debt isn't higher taxes. It's fiscal discipline on the part of the federal government. No matter what marginal tax rates are, federal tax receipts are almost always between 18% and 20% of GDP. The variable that politicians can control is the spending, but they don't control it. Trump hasn't. Obama and Biden didn't. Bush and Cheney didn't. Clinton did at times, but only because Newt Gingrich forced him to. And that was over 20 years ago. And I want to tell people like Donald Trump, I don't want people like Donald Trump paying more in taxes. I want them paying less. Everything they pay in taxes means capital sucked out of the productive private sector and reallocated by politicians to serve the agenda of politicians. We have less wealth creation and less capital formation when we let this happen every single time. So if Trump paid that little in taxes, we need to reelect him and then ask him, as a top agenda item for his second term, to explain to the rest of the country how to do the same thing and make sure the IRS doesn't give us a hard time when we follow his advice. Excellent article from HermanCain.com. And the part about fiscal discipline on the part of the federal government, that's a key. That's a key element of this entire thing. The federal government spends money as though it's a tap that will never run dry. You may not be aware of this. Odds are if you're listening to me, you are aware of this, but maybe not. The money being spent by the federal government right now on the programs that are happening right now doesn't exist. It's not coming from you and me. It's coming out of thin air. The business of the government is operating pretty much on credit. And it is trillions to 22 or so trillion dollars in debt. Yes. Think about your particular debt situation. Now, if you are debt-free, I'm not talking to you, so calm down. I'm talking to people who, on a monthly basis, because they can't make ends meet, are using credit to handle certain things. It happens. Just to be able to live your life, you're building a bigger and bigger mountain of debt every month. It happens. There are people who live their lives this way. They have multiple credit cards, and they pay for things on those credit cards. And initially, they told themselves, I will use this to do this particular one thing, and then I will pay it off. And it's still there. And you've got 5, 10, 20, 30, $50,000 in credit debt. Maybe 100 or more. And the credit card companies, as long as you keep making those payments, the minimum payments, up to a certain point, are happy to keep going because most of what you're paying them is the interest anyway. And they're making money off of you. When you pay it off, they're no longer making money. So they'll let it keep going until you cross a line and they say, that's enough. And then they start demanding you make much larger payments. And then you're in big trouble. But there are a lot of people who do live this way. This is how they buy their toys. This is how they have their iPhones and their Apple Watches. They have their MacBook computers. They have their technology. They have their cars. They have homes, which they truly can't afford. And so they can't afford the home, so they live off of credit cards otherwise. It happens. You have neighbors doing this. If you're not in debt, you have neighbors who are doing this. I can say this because I know people who live this way. My wife and I have lived this way. The federal government is living this way. It's racking up debt day after day after day. And regardless of what anyone may believe, if they soak the rich, if they took the 1% and confiscated every liquid cent from them, they couldn't pay for what they're doing right now at the government level. If they sold off everything that the top 1% owns, they could barely make a dent in what's happening right now. Just in the current spending, not in the debt, just in the spending. And if they decided, well, that's not enough, how far can we go? And they took everything from every working person who's earning an income. They couldn't pay for government programs for 1 year. And once they do that, the well's empty. So government spending is the problem, not rich people's taxes. Come on. Oh, yeah. Time for the final segment. Scanning social media during the break. Scott Adams. He's the Dilbert guy. You know, the Dilbert comic strip. Scott Adams is the artist behind Dilbert. He posted a poll on Twitter with a question. Have any of you lied to pollsters about your support for Trump? Ooh. Three possible answers. Yes, no, and never polled. 18.1% of those answering said yes. 9.6% said no. 72.3% never polled. Have you ever been polled? A political poll? Ever? Yeah, me neither. Me neither. And I am not just a likely voter, I'm a registered voter. I will be out there voting in every election. I've never been polled. Never. Interesting. Well, Project Veritas, James O'Keefe, his organization that digs in and goes undercover for journalism to find out what's really going on, has a new investigation. It appears to show a massive ballot harvesting racket conducted in the district of Democrat Representative Ilhan Omar, or Ilhan, that's the pronunciation is correct, Ilhan Omar, in the swing state of Minnesota. Project Veritas founder James O'Keefe released a video Sunday evening exposing an apparent sophisticated ballot harvesting scheme targeting mostly Somali-born seniors in Minneapolis. And those who spoke to O'Keefe alleged there are exchanges of cash for mail-in ballots in many cases. One video shared by the investigation shows an alleged ballot harvester named Liban Mohammed boasting on the social media app Snapchat about carrying hundreds of absentee ballots in his car. Mohammed is identified as the brother of Minneapolis City Council member Jamal Osman, who won a special election to represent the city's 6th ward this summer. Mohammed said in the video, recorded in July, "Numbers don't lie. Numbers don't lie. You can see my car is full. All these here are absentee ballots. Can't you see? Look at all these. My car is full. All these are for Jamal Osman. We got 300 today for Jamal Osman only. Money is the king of this world. A campaign is driven by money." Mohammed also works for Representative Omar, according to a Somali activist quoted in the video. But Mohammed and his brother Osman are Somali-born, as is Ilhan Omar herself. The Project Veritas investigation also speaks with an anonymous former Minneapolis political worker who told O'Keefe that Omar's campaign deputy district director Ali Issa Ghani ran a separate ballot harvesting scheme targeting elderly people at the Charles Horn Towers housing complex in Minneapolis before the Minnesota primary on August 8th. The worker said, "Knock on the door of the elderly and say, 'Your ballot's come? Give it to me.'" The person told Project Veritas many people, including young people and women, were paid for mail-in ballots before the August Minnesota primary. Quote, "Cash, cash, cash. They were carrying bags of money. When you vote and they mark you off, then you get in the van, they give you the cash." Additionally, Omar Jamal, who chairs the Minneapolis Somali Watchdog Group, told Project Veritas the video posted by Mohammed bragging about ballot harvesting is just the tip of the iceberg. Jamal said that Mohammed is one of many people working for Omar who is linked to numerous ballot harvesting schemes. Jamal said, "It's an open secret. She'll do anything that she can to get elected, and she has hundreds of people on the streets doing that." He also had a warning. He said, "If American people don't pay attention to what's happening, the country will collapse." Omar's campaign was contacted for comment. The alleged scheme, as described to Project Veritas, essentially comes down to voters being compelled to request ballots, which are then picked up by political activists. Those not paid for their ballots are allegedly manipulated into filing or filling out and giving the ballots away. O'Keefe says ballot harvesting is real and it's become a big business. Our investigation into this ballot harvesting ring demonstrates clearly how these unscrupulous operators exploit the elderly and immigrant communities and have turned the sacred ballot box into a commodities trading desk. And he concluded in the video, quote, Ilhan Omar and her campaign may be behind one of the biggest voter fraud schemes in American history. And another video was released last night, a second one, outlining even more, telling us that operatives will even go into the voting booth with people, okayed by people operating the polling position. And they will tell people, vote for this guy, vote for that guy. They will direct the vote. It is a huge, huge, corrupt underground operation. Manipulating the vote on behalf of someone who wants to destroy the American way of life. Well, President Donald Trump has called for the U.S. attorney in Minnesota to investigate this report. He called for the probe on Twitter after Project Veritas released a report Sunday alleging Omar supporters in Minneapolis were illegally obtaining ballots. He tweeted, "This is totally illegal. Hope that the U.S. attorney in Minnesota has this and other of her many misdeeds under serious review. If not, why not? We will win Minnesota because of her and law enforcement. Save Minneapolis and Iron O-Range," he tweeted. Project Veritas, which uses undercover journalists, highlighted a video of an operative bragging about collecting the ballots on social media. Now, ballot harvesting, in case you aren't aware, is when a third party collects ballots from voters and brings them to polling stations. The ballot collectors can be paid for their work. In most states, ballot harvesting, which is clearly open to broad corruption, is illegal. Ballot harvesting, mail-in voting. Coming from over at American Thinker, Monica Showalter. Showalter has an article called Trump Busts the Media Narrative About Mail-in Voting Being Fraud-Free. Mail-in voting, which is banned in most countries based on its huge potential for fraud, some of which came from bitter experience, has been promoted by Democrats and in the press as risk-free. President Trump's effort to sound the alarm about the potential for mail-in fraud is always editorialized with the phrase with additives such as without evidence or pushing the false claim. Here's an example from ABC News. Of the 136 million voters in the last election, fewer than a dozen were alleged to have voted twice, the report claimed, helpfully citing a rare Trump voter who pleaded guilty to such a deed. The idea was to claim that only a Trump supporter would commit ballot fraud, something you'd think they'd be worried about given their voting choices. But this isn't about Trump voter fraud. The gaslighting that ballot fraud doesn't exist is a Democrat bid to allow them to rig the election. And the media are claiming no danger, zero, as if the tiny number of prosecutions in this age of prosecutors picking and choosing whom to prosecute as priorities were proof of low ballot fraud. They seem to think we're naive. Well, Trump has busted apart their narrative with a long list of incidences that ought to give anyone pause. Number one, in Brooklyn, 25% of mail-in ballots were ruled invalid during the June Democrat primary. Two, in a New Jersey special election, nearly 20% of the ballots were thrown out. Four people prosecuted for fraud. Three, in a Florida primary, more than 35,000 mail-in ballots were rejected and over 100,000 ballots rejected in California. Four, in Pennsylvania's primary, half of the counties were still counting ballots a week after the election. Five, the story of discarded military ballots discovered in Pennsylvania, many of them cast for Trump. Six, reports in Wisconsin of three trays of mail containing absentee ballots were found in a ditch. And number seven, in North Carolina, voters reported receiving two ballots in the mail. The president also revisited the disastrous results of the 2020 Democrat Iowa caucuses. He said they still don't really know who the winner is. I think they called somebody eventually, but it was many, many weeks later. And he questioned whether Democrats should be meddling with how elections are being held in other states. He said they can't run a simple caucus. Yet now they're trying to dramatically write election laws nationwide just weeks before an election. That's a long, precisely sourced, verified list, by the way. It signals a lot of this garbage going on. Huge amounts of power to be won, as is evidenced in the millions of dollars raised for the congressional seats with paychecks of around $200,000. Why wouldn't there be people willing to cheat their way into power, especially with the likelihood of getting caught pretty much zero? The press will ignore it until it can't ignore it. But hard facts like this coming from the president, who's leading a bid to get rid of these gamey, fraudy practices that end up stealing elections and democracy, is a very good look on him. It's always good to see him fight back. And he's fighting back nicely on this. Something for all of us to keep in mind. The press, which is progressive, will always align themselves with the Democrats, who are progressive, because they believe, just like the progressive politicians do, that they are intellectually and morally superior. They're smarter than the average guy, and they care more. They understand how things work. They're there to tell you what's really going on for your good. That's how the press sees things. They're going to align with the Democrat politicians because of their shared progressive belief. They're never going to tell you the truth about voting fraud. Because in their minds, because they have no moral compass, they believe that anything that achieves their end goal, their righteous, proper, beneficial end goal, is acceptable. It doesn't matter what it is. They will literally do anything in order to assure progressive government is in place. That's something to remember. And it's not just the national press, it's also your local press. Watch it carefully, too. Hey, that's it for today. God bless you. Have a good one. We'll see you tomorrow for the next edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.